Good evening, everybody. Blue Cliff Record, case 6. The teacher Yunmin offered the saying, I do not ask you about before the 15th of the month. Come, give a phrase about after the 15th. The teacher Yunmin offered a saying, I do not ask you about before the 15th of the month. Come, offer a phrase about after the 15th. And then he himself responded, every day is a good day, he said. Every day is a good day. So this is a Zen koan story. We haven't really talked about koans in a while. And what I love about these stories is they don't explain anything. We're kind of addicted to explanation. So they a little bit short-circuit that desire, which can be frustrating and helpful. But they somehow show something. And because of the night it is, I was thinking about gratitude. And I'm really grateful that we're here, actually. I wondered the night before Thanksgiving, I think we haven't always met because we figured who would come, but apparently we're here. That's wonderful. And Yunmin's expression, every day is a good day, I think it's such a deep understanding of gratitude. Because it's gratitude that's not really contingent upon anything. We have wonderful ways of practicing gratitude, and many of them are somewhat contingent, right? I'm grateful because. Well, what if that because wasn't there? Well, we can usually find something to be grateful for, so it's okay. What if it's I'm grateful with no because? I'm just grateful. Every day is a good day. This complete appreciation for the day or the night, no matter what it brings. And the business about the 15th is because they use the lunar calendar, so it's kind of a literal translation. It probably says 15 of month in Chinese or something. And what happens on the 15th of the month in the lunar cycle is the full moon. So I do not ask you about before the full moon. Give me a phrase about after the full moon. So Yunmin is one of our Zen ancestors. One of the central values and conceits of Zen is the ancestral lineage, the family. It's a family practice. And there's a couple of centuries in China where we focus on our family members then. And we don't always think about our family members in, I don't know, 16th century Japan or something, but we'll have to work on that, getting to know them too. But most of the literature is about this period in China. Yunmin lived in the 9th century. For a long time, he lived from 860 to 949. It's about 88, 89 years. Which is remarkable, actually, for 9th century China. I don't know what the average life expectancy was, but probably not a whole lot more than 30. And many of the Zen masters live a long time, at least that's the stories that come down. And Yunmin was later seen as the founder of one of the schools of Zen. Later on, in the 11th and 12th centuries, they were kind of working this out and decided there had been 5 schools of Zen. 5 houses of Zen. So Yunmin's important. He's the head of the house, the head of one of the houses of Zen. And his name shows up often in the traditional collections of stories. I looked it up, and he appears 18 times in this particular collection of 100 stories called the Blue Cliff Record. And in his younger days, he's the subject of one of the flashier and more violent famous Zen stories. So you should know, as we study our ancestors a little bit, that there's some crazy stories Every family has crazy stories, right? And I think, like all family crazy stories, they're a little bit allegorical. You know, each time you say it, it gets a little more dramatic. And so you say something for, you know, 17 or 18 centuries, it gets pretty dramatic. So, but anyway, here's the story. When he was a boy, Yunmen became a monk under a master named Zhisheng in Zhejiang. And he studied there for several years, taking his monastic vows, ordaining as a priest at the age of 20, according to this in year 883, which is a little bit off from the other years. But anyway, the story is that the teachings with Master Zhisheng didn't satisfy him. And so he went to another place, another Zen place, to Dao Zhong's school to seek enlightenment. And according to a legend which was first mentioned in year 1100, so a couple of, you know, 100 more years after he was alive, trying to enter this new monastery caused him a serious injury. Here's the story. Yunmen went to Bokushu's temple to seek Zen. The first time he went, he was not admitted. They wouldn't let him in. The second time he went, he was not admitted. The third time he went, the gate opened slightly, and it was the teacher himself, the master of the monastery, who cracked the gate open, given here with his Japanese name, Bokushu. And thus, Yunmen was able to stick his leg in. Like a salesman, you know, attempting to gain entrance. And the teacher, Bokushu, yelled, urging the young Yunmen, saying, "Speak! Speak!" But as Yunmen opened his mouth, Bokushu pushed him out and slammed the large gate shut. Unfortunately, Yunmen's leg was still in the gate. His leg was broken. And then they let him in. So, we don't push that hard here, usually. But I think, you know, these kind of dramatic stories are helpful. We can't just sort of throw them out with the bathwater. As encouragement, you know, that there is a place for hard work and a place for discipline and a place for devotion, a place for showing up whether we feel like it or not, a place for working through some resistance, even some interpersonal resistance. We've been studying a little bit about conflict and trouble. Just keep showing up, you know, showing up three times, even though somebody didn't look at us the right way or didn't acknowledge what we thought should be acknowledged or something like that. That's okay to take our practice seriously. And it's good to learn how to relax and put it all down. I do not ask you about the day before Thanksgiving. Come, say something. What happens after Thanksgiving? Is every day a good day? Is every day a day that we can offer our thanks? So I had a challenging interaction yesterday morning in Seattle. I keep telling all these Seattle stories. In this case, actually, it's a pretty dramatic Seattle story because I was on the 40th floor of the Columbia Tower. And we don't, like, you know, we don't have any buildings like that around here, you know. You know that you can go to the 40th floor of the Columbia Tower? Incredible view. And guess what else they have on the 40th floor of the Columbia Tower? This is Seattle, remember.
The Starbucks.
Yep. So I was in the Starbucks on the 40th floor. 1,000 feet above the ground or something. And I had a really challenging conversation with a few colleagues down there. They were really questioning some of my choices, some of the things I'd done and said and emailed. And they were very kind and careful about the way they said it. They were trying to give me constructive feedback and express their needs. And they're meditation teachers. And I could feel myself taking it in, being pretty receptive, you know, trying to practice with it. But also, I could feel myself starting to shut down. Feel a little bewildered, and like a little boy, scared little boy. And it did not feel like a good day. And then I got home and I hung out at home. I kept thinking about this conversation. Kept coming to mind. Kept feeling a little like queasy about it. Wasn't that bad, really. It's just my response. And when I was trying to go to bed, I thought about it, but I got to sleep fine. What was interesting was the first thought I had when I woke up was about this conversation. Just like, it's right back. And I noticed that this challenging conversation distracted me a bit when I was out walking around downtown with my wife. And she is very sensitive to that, so I get rapid feedback usually. And my mind was on the conversation. I wasn't really, you know, present with her. And I was trying to figure it out, and I drafted an email, which I thankfully didn't send, explaining my point of view and trying to understand and trying to point things out that maybe they didn't, you know. But then somehow this afternoon, the feeling lifted, and I could actually feel it lifting. It was like there was a weight on me, sort of like surrounding me. Do you know this feeling? Like kind of pressing in all sides, like the air was a little thicker. And then a feeling like of that weight just floating away again. When it was settled on me, when I was in the middle of this state, if it is a state, I don't think I could have imagined this feeling of lifting, this feeling of opening. My frame of reference when I felt caught by the challenge of this interaction was more like I had to figure something out or solve something, thus the email and so on. In my journal, I wrote that I felt like inflamed. I'm not sure why I said inflamed, but that's the word I used. And this can happen in any conflict, right? It can happen in our Sangha conflicts. We somehow enter into a sort of disoriented, disconnected state. And we try to make sense of things, as we always do. And we have an attitude and an approach. We're trying to be wise and smart as we can be. But somehow the whole thing is a little out of kilter. And sometimes, if we can just be with it for a while, something will shift. Something will lift. And then we're in a whole different situation. There's still stuff to work out with our friend. I still have things to work on with my colleagues down there. But it's a whole different feeling. It doesn't have that sense of fear or urgency or needing to straighten somebody else out. That we can return to a wise place, to a place of gratitude, that we can actually return to every day is a good day, even if in the conventional way, it's not a good day. It's not a good day. Maybe one day will all of us learn. I don't know if it's a matter of learning, but maybe one day will all of us find that naturally we can rest in every day is a good day. Every day. I don't know. But at least we can know that there's a space to return to, a place full of gratitude, a place no further away than our own heart, a place not contingent on things being to our liking or not to our liking, a place where we can stand even though there's nowhere to stand. And from that place we can be kinder, clearer and wiser. Compassion and wisdom are there. How do we get there? No clue. But it's there. It's there. Maybe we let that place find us instead of thinking that we have to find something. Maybe we just get out of the way after a while. We get tired enough of our own craziness that we get out of the way. So I'm going to read the comment of another teacher on this case, John Tarrant. He's a Zen teacher from New Zealand originally, I think. He teaches in California. He's big on koans. He's really into koans. And does some really creative, kind of interesting ways of working with koans. And he also, I learned not too long ago, I was on the edge of my awareness, but it got more clear that he does a weekend retreat in Seattle every year. So maybe we should all go sometime. Now I've forgotten what time of year it is. July, maybe? Anybody know when John Tarrant comes to? He comes to Nalanda Bodhi, or Nalanda West, I think it's called, in Seattle. Which is actually a Tibetan place, so the world's all mixed up. Anyway, here's a comment from John Tarrant on this case. The teacher said, I'm not asking about before the full moon. Say a word or two about after the full moon. The teacher answered the question, every day is a good day. John Tarrant goes on, gratitude comes with a feeling of openness, shyness, vulnerability. The person who is grateful can be hurt or rejected. She has taken a risk. With gratitude, there is more at stake. Life is not small. Gratitude can surprise me, just the way a poem or a song can surprise me and fling me into another wider air. When the ancient Chinese thought of waking up as intimacy, they were referring to an appreciation for trees and rivers. Appreciation so strong that it amounted to identification. What's outside of us is us also. They also meant that our own innermost experience leads outward to connection. Gratitude is an impulse that creates community. It is my contribution to living with others. It doesn't happen to me as a solo Ronin meditator practicing the dark arts of consciousness alone in a hut. I don't know if John ever practiced that way, but anyway. Because of this, and because other people are always doing unexpected things, gratitude has to confront and include anti-gratitude, bitterness, and despair. If we want to speak for gratitude, we have to go down into desolation, damage, and hurt, and find space to breathe exactly there. And that way, gratitude is a path, as much as a feeling, it's a path. It asks me to look where I'm putting my feet. Gratitude is what we feel for every single thing that occurs, since we would rather be alive than not. We would rather be here than not. And perhaps our only job is to celebrate being here, being happy, and being for each other. It's a nice ending, you know, being for each other. So another thing I'm grateful for is that we are going to get to have our winter practice period again this coming next year, January into March. And I was feeling a little disoriented about that, and like, what should we do, or, you know, how is it going to feel this year? Somehow it's always great and powerful and interesting. Oftentimes we'll have a single person kind of in the middle of the wheel as the head student, as the shoe, so it's called, but we won't have that this year. And so we had another meeting of colleagues, which I didn't feel that way about. Another meeting of colleagues recently, the practice committee met to consider this, kind of like our elders. Everybody who has themselves been in that role, that shuso role, is seen as a kind of role of training. And after that, you get to go to more meetings, you know. After that, you're a respected elder, I meant to say. And you get to go to more meetings. And anyway, in 5 minutes flat, we kind of figured it out. It was really beautiful. So I want to hand out to you a preliminary sketch of what that might look like, and also mention one component of that, which one of our Sangha members, Thomas, is partly responsible for. So I want to hand out this outline. So it's good everyone can have one, and we'll have a little sort of micro meeting moment here in the formal Zendo. Some of these dates may shift slightly, but I think the basic are times, you know, but the basic outline I think is true. And so once everyone has this, we'll just kind of walk through it for a moment so we know it's coming. And then we'll have a little bit of a conversation. Is there not enough? There should be enough. I made 20. Oh, look, they're stuck together. You can have one if you're like, oh, what's this? It's just paper. Anyway, so the whole thing will have a theme. So the backstory here is that in the days of the Buddha, they tell us, mostly the monks would live in sort of small autonomous groups spread out kind of near various villages, basically so that their load would be sustainable because they lived off the villagers' generosity, begging for their food. And they'd wander around when they could feel they were being a burden, go to another town and stuff like that. But then in the rainy season, in the summer, monsoon season, like you couldn't really wander around, everything's just too darn muddy. So they would cluster up and have a period with their teachers or with the Buddha of practice. So we try to continue that, although not in the summer, but in the middle of winter when we like need it the most in our climate. And so we'll start on Wednesday evening. So anyway, there's a theme, So there's a theme, which is the way of the Bodhisattva, the archetypal enlightening being of Mahayana Buddhism. We'll learn a lot more about Bodhisattvas. And there's a famous late Indian text from a man, named Shantideva, a monk named Shantideva, which has the exact same title. I put the Sanskrit title there, Bodhicharyavatara, which basically means the way of the Bodhisattva. So we'll study that. Over the course of the time, we'll start on January 14th, one of our Wednesday nights. We'll have a special ceremony to open. And right away on a Saturday, we'll get right to it, Saturday the 17th, which is my birthday. We'll sit all day. It's a good birthday party. I don't know if my wife has realized that yet. And then for the next 6 weeks, it's a 6 week period, six and a half, I think, we'll modify Wednesday night a little bit, where it says weekly practice. Is everyone tracking? Does this make sense? Okay, cool. We'll have a study group like we have had off and on. Chris recently led a wonderful one on making a change for good. So we'll have a study group on this text, led by all the former Shusos in some arrangement. And then for the evening, we'll just do a whole lot of meditation. Three periods of Zazen, with a walking meditation in between, and with the refuges. So we won't have this schedule with the talk. It's a time to kind of go deep, into the darkness. And, and as always, that depending on your body, that can be a physical challenge. So the invitation is there to lie down and change postures and stand up and whatever you need to do so you are healthy. But it's wonderful to be in the room for the whole evening, just nothing but quiet, just meditation. And there'll be opportunities to meet with me. And then we're hoping the library will be ready. We're going to do some work in the library to improve the soundproofing. So we're hoping the library will be ready so that the former Shusos can also offer interviews, because they're qualified to do that, but we don't make use of that much because of our facility. Friday and Monday will be kind of as usual. Saturday will be more or less as usual in the early part. 6 a.m. every Saturday. We already have practice every Saturday, early in the morning. But I'm attempting to persuade you with italic type there that would be a great time to go for it on Saturday morning if that's not usually part of your routine, because like, oh yeah, 6 in the morning? Are they serious? Well, it's beautiful though, And you got to kind of arrange your life so it works, right? So when you go to bed is a factor, stuff like that. And maybe it's not possible with your work schedule or whatever else you do, but think about it. It's worth thinking. If you're like, it's not for me in general, well, maybe for 6 weeks, or some of those weeks I could do it. But then we thought of a great idea, which is every other week, and the dates are listed there. We'll continue for most of the rest of the morning. I'm not sure the exact timing. We're going to work on that probably at a later meeting. But maybe we'll sit from 6 to about 8:20, the usual early thing. We'll have breakfast either here or at the co-op, I hope here. And we'll reconvene. Or maybe you'll join us then. Maybe 9:15 to 11:15, yeah, plus or minus. So that we can have a little more meditation, but then to have a nice long period for a talk. A talk that can include discussion, maybe small group work, maybe some creative experiential-led things I like to do sometimes. We can really explore the theme and the text in those three Saturday mornings and build on, familiarize. So I think the Wednesday nights at 6 will kind of familiarize ourselves with the text, and then the Saturday morning talks, when we have longer, we'll get to really dig into some themes around it. And there's a few other things mentioned, but what I want to, well, just almost done. About the middle, we will have some talking in here on a Thursday night, or a Wednesday night, sorry. Right about the middle, just check in. How's everybody doing? Like the Sangha conversation style, council practice. A little quieter maybe, but each person to say, how's the practice period going for me? And then here's the super cool new addition, which this has all been a prologue for. Which is, so bodhisattva means a being who awakens and serves others. And wouldn't it be great if we went out into the actual real-life world with our actual hands and did some work, you know, did some work helping others. And so Thomas has done a little research into how we could show up as a community and help others for a day. And the great thought we had was, we'll integrate that into the practice period. So hopefully we can find something interesting to do on Saturday, February 28th, and everybody can come, or a lot of everybody can come. And so Edie's handing out a little list of Thomas's research. And so we wanted to spend a few moments now getting your input into what we should do. I mean, it's kind of an amazing gift. Like, what if like 15 or 20 of us were able to go help somewhere for like 5 or 6 hours, you know, or four or five hours, who knows how long. That's potentially like 100 hours of labor. That's astounding, really, you know. It's astounding. We could do a lot of good in the world somewhere. So Thomas, you want to tell us a little bit about our choices?
Sure.
Awesome.
So, made a bunch of phone calls a couple weeks ago. One option is a work party with the Bellingham Parks. That would be a Saturday project, 10 to 12, potting small plants for transplants. Another option is the Nooksack Salmon Enhancement Association. They've always got projects. Habitat for Humanity, they might have a need in the spring, probably not in February. There's a couple other things listed there. Also, I got an email from Larrabee State Park a couple hours ago, simply asking, what kind of stuff would you be interested in doing? And I also got a phone call from an organization called Growing Veterans.
Oh.
And so I went there on Saturday and helped them winterize their greenhouse. That was fun. Mm.
Yeah, I keep hearing about that project, yeah. So a lot of outdoor things, huh? Cool, wow.
Yeah.
Adventurous.
If you're interested in this project, he's got a telephone number on that little half sheet that you can call him. Maybe you have your email on there too, I don't know. But be in contact with him if you've got ideas or connections to places that need help.
You don't have any thoughts or impulses at this moment, or other ideas of what places we could serve? Mm. Every one of those would be great.
Sandwich Island.
Yeah, go down and help the camp, yeah. That's a great idea. That's the Community of Christ Sandwich Island campground where we do the long retreats. That's a great idea. Because they maintain this enormous place with a couple of volunteers, and they always have stuff needs doing. I remember a long time ago, Thomas, there was a project called Volunteer Chore. I don't know if that still exists. But it's like a directory maintained by the Volunteer Center of individual people in their homes who need help, who need chores done.
it still exists.
Yeah, Vultur, they call it for short. So that's another possibility. And February, I do, indoors does kind of pop into my mind, I have to admit.
There's always Maple Valley Inn for, they provide food, you know, for folks serving food and...
they do stuff on Saturday?
I don't know that they do, maybe not actual serving, but they also have other kind of jobs to do too.
Okay, any other thoughts? We don't have to figure, we're not figuring anything out, we're just kind of letting you know that this is happening and that Thomas is our point person and seeing if you have any ideas, but we can think about it and research and firm it up later on.
And if you'd like to form a committee, you could call Thomas.
If you call Thomas, then two of you are instantly a committee. Just
there we go.
My magic, you know. And then you can instantly dissolve the committee by hanging up.
Transient
committees, that's the best kind.
This came out of a suggestion from having gone out as a sangha to work on Talis's farm about a month ago, and people really enjoyed doing it and thought, what do we need some more of this kind of
thing? So we shall. So we shall. Okay, well, we're out of time. Thank you for being here tonight. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. We can close the talk with our closing chant, and then we'll do the refuge chant, and then we have a great plan to be very brief with our announcements, which isn't totally organized yet, but we'll experiment with brief announcements in the lobby to close tonight. May our intentions equally extend.